from deep inside your radio.
From the Le Show Dome, ladies and gentlemen, I hesitate to bring all this up at the start of the broadcast only because the history of the start of the broadcast is that very often it doesn't get broadcast. But we're going to just cross our fingers this week and hope for the best, because this really, if I was running an adult broadcast or a publication, this would be the stuff that you'd start with, because this would be the most important stuff. And then you'd go downward till you get to the funny stuff. From the Times of London, owned by Rupert Murdoch. What's he thinking? He's thinking, oh, that Anna Deng. Iraq's former interim prime minister, Ayad Alawi. Remember him? He was ours for a year. Well, not quite for a year, for about 8 months. We gave sovereignty. We handed over sovereignty to him. Tainted though it, partial, limited though it was. He now warns that his country is facing civil war. Now he tells us. CIA said this last year, but now it's from Alawi. He predicts dire consequences for Europe and America as well as the Middle East if the Iraq crisis is not resolved. Quote, the problem is that the Americans have no vision and no clear policy on how to go about in Iraq, unquote, says our longtime ally, Alawi. Where the heck Alawi? In an interview with the Sunday Times, he said the policy should be building national unity in Iraq. Without this, we will most certainly slip into a civil war. We are practically in stage one of a civil war as we speak. And that was last week. He said Iraq had collapsed as a state and had to be rebuilt. The only way forward was through national unity and a firm but peaceful foreign relation policy. Unless these criteria were satisfied, the country will deteriorate. Again, now he tells us. Alawi's concerned. You know what's going on in Iraq. But this is Alawi, ladies and gentlemen. Our guy. He's in intense negotiations to create a new multi-ethnic secular coalition before the next elections in December, when he hopes to make a comeback, political comeback. If we don't build a state, we will lose, not just as Iraq, but the region as a whole. And Europe should say goodbye to stability, and so should the United States. Iraq will become a breeding ground for terrorists, unquote, Ayad Alawi. Ladies and gentlemen, are we on yet? This, if that hadn't been the big news of the week from over there, this would be. Iraq's defense minister said Thursday that ousted leader Saddam Hussein was the aggressor in the war against Iran during the 80s. That announcement accompanied another more interesting announcement. Iraq and Iran announced plans for closer military cooperation. Iraq and Iran, ladies and gentlemen, think of it. We've spent only $200 billion to bring Iraq and Iran together. Think of what we could do if we really wanted to put out the big money. We could bring Cuba back. Iraqi Defense Minister Sadun al-Dulemi's visit to Iran marked a new effort to build ties between Iraq and mainly Shiite Muslim Iran. We have come here to open a new page in our relations against the painful page of the past, said al-Dulemi. Those pages can be painful. You get paper cuts off of them. Iran and Iraq would form joint committees to work out cooperation on clearing minefields and, quote, modernizing Iraq's army, unquote. That's from an Iranian spokesperson who said no one can prevent this cooperation. He said that without elaborating on the extent of cooperation. So, civil war in Iraq, maybe. And Iran-Iraqi military cooperation, for sure. Who says we don't cover the good news in the media? Hello, welcome to the show.
Standing in the shadows of love, I'm getting ready for the heartaches to come. Can't you see me standing in the shadows of love? I'm getting ready for the heartaches to come. treat you right now, baby. Didn't I do the best I could? Now, didn't I? So don't you be stuck.
Deep inside the tears. when she was my girl. Mm-hmm. My girl, when she was my girl. When she was my girl, there was laughter and loving in my world every day. When she was my girl, oh, what joy she would bring. Now I've lost everything. She's gone, 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 gone. I spend the night dreaming how she used to be when she was my girl.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this week's edition of the show. Those of you who can hear the music, not the podcast listeners, don't ask me, please. We're, among other things, paying tribute this week to Odie Bennett, the late, recently passed bass singer of the Four Tops, the bum-bum-bum-bum guy. I was at the Essence Festival in New Orleans, and Aretha Franklin sort of shocked the crowd because it was the day that Luther Vandross died. And she said, we're going to pay tribute to a fallen friend of ours. And then she said, Odie Bennett. And the crowd, you could just feel, I mean, a solidly R&B audience. Even they were just like, what? What happened to Luther? And then she said, and Luther Vandross. So he was sort of passed over, shall we say. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, speaking of the home of the homeless, this from the Santa Monica Mirror, which is not actually a mirror, it's a newspaper. Quote, thanks to radio man Harry Shearer and his KCRW-based program, Le Show, Santa Monica is known to listeners across the country, excuse me, around the world, as the home of the homeless, a characterization that annoys real estate agents because they claim it brings down property values every time Shearer says it. You're welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Don't blame the bubble on me. That's all I can say. So there is more from over there. The good news. This is from the Guardian newspaper in London. When Paul Bremer, the American head of the Coalition Provisional Authority until June last year, arrived in Iraq, there was $6 billion left over from the UN Oil for Food program, as well as sequestered and frozen assets and at least $10 billion from resumed oil exports of Iraq. According to the Security Council, all these funds were transferred into a new account at the Federal Reserve Bank in New York called the Development Fund for Iraq and intended to be spent by the Coalition Provisional Authority in a transparent manner for the benefit of the Iraqi people. There was also $18 billion voted by the Congress for Iraqi redevelopment. Last year, when Bremer left Baghdad 2 days early, the coalition authority had spent up to $20 billion of Iraqi money, only $300 million of U.S. funds. The Coalition Provisional Authority maintained one fund of nearly $600 million cash for which there's no paperwork. $200 million of it was kept in a room in one of Saddam's former palaces. The U.S. soldier in charge used to keep the key to the room in his backpack, which he left on his desk when he left for lunch. American auditors have so far referred more than 100 contracts involving billions of dollars paid to American personnel and corporations for investigation and possible criminal prosecution. They've also discovered that $8.8 billion that passed through the new Iraqi government ministries in Baghdad while Bremer was in charge is unaccounted for. A further $3.5 billion appropriated by Congress for Iraqi development has instead paid for security. Well, we got what we paid for. There's more of that. You can imagine there's more of that. By the way, I know we're not supposed to care anymore since London. That's what I heard on Fox News Sunday this weekend. We're not supposed to care about these detainee issues anymore now that we've been reminded that terrorism exists. But just to keep in mind some numbers when we start caring again. 520 prisoners remain at Guantanamo. 234 have been released or transferred back to their home countries for some fine treatment. Of those 234, 12 have returned to terrorism. That's 5% of those released. 5%, ladies and gentlemen, of those released from Guantanamo have returned to terrorism. You can make your own conclusions as to whether those other people who were detained for up to 2 years were done so for good reason, whether they kind of converted, saw the error of their ways during their 2 years at Gitmo, or otherwise, don't you know? Now, here's my favorite story of the week, and it's been good so far, don't you think? No, I'm not, you know, these are just out there for catching. But this one, ladies and gentlemen, this is from the Asia Times. Pakistani President General, he's not a President General, he's a general who named himself President, that's why he gets that title. Pervez, I like to call him the Perv, Musharraf's unscheduled trip to Saudi Arabia at the end of June has raised many an eyebrow, this is according to the Asia Times, in Islamabad's diplomatic circles, where it's believed the visit was meant to seek the assistance of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia to circumvent the ongoing IAEA investigations into reports the Saudis might have purchased nuclear technology from Pakistan. Good night, everybody. Drive safely. I'll see you in the shelters. Saudi Arabia, ladies and gentlemen, may have purchased nuclear material from Pakistan while we were worrying about Iraq. Speculation goes Musharraf was chalking out a joint strategy on what stance the two leaders would adopt to satisfy the IAEA. Saudi Arabia is under increasing pressure to open its nuclear facilities for inspection. The IAEA suspects its nuclear program has reached a level with Pakistani cooperation where it should attract international attention. The U.S. had been investigating whether or not Dr. A.Q. Khan, the father of the Pakistani nuclear weapon, sold nuclear technology to the Saudis and other Arab countries. These are our friends, Pakistan, ladies and gentlemen. The good people. Acting under extreme pressure from the IAEA, the Saudis signed the Small Quantities Protocol on June 16th, which makes inspections easier. But the U.S., European Union, and Australia, hello, wanted to agree to full inspections. The Saudi position is they will agree to the demand only if other countries do so, including Israel. Last year's unearthing of Dr. A.Q. Khan's nuclear supermarket increased international suspicions that Khan had developed ties with Saudi Arabia, which has the capacity to pay for all kinds of nuclear-related services. Even before the revelations about Khan's activities, concerns about Saudi-Pakistani nuclear cooperation persisted due to strengthened cooperation between the two countries. In particular, frequent high-level visits of Saudi and Pakistani officials over the past several years raised serious questions about the possibility of clandestine nuclear cooperation. Saudi defector Mohammed Khilafi who was first secretary of the Saudi mission to the UN until July of 94, testified before the IAEA that Saudi Arabia has tried to get a bomb since 1975. In late June of 94, he abandoned his UN post to join the opposition party. After his defection, he distributed more than 10,000 documents he obtained from the Saudi Arabian embassy, documents showing that between 85 and 90, the Saudi government paid $5 billion to Saddam Hussein to build a nuclear weapon. He further alleged the Saudis had provided financial contributions to the Pakistani nuclear program and had signed a secret agreement that obligated Pakistan to respond against an aggressor with its nuclear arsenal if Saudi Arabia was nuked. It's a cute little world we live in, isn't it, ladies and gentlemen? Cute. But let's take a deep breath. Now, oh, you know, ladies and gentlemen, before we do anything else, the Washington Yak Fests on Sunday took time from the terrorism concern, newly heightened by the attacks in London, and other matters, to pay a little attention to the Supreme Court, the retirement of Sandra Day O'Connor, and the heavily rumored retirement of Chief Justice Rehnquist. And you know, the question posed in so many ways by so many of the hosts is, are the Democrats going to filibuster if George W. Bush appoints a hardline conservative? If he doesn't appoint a hardline conservative, are his conservative supporters going to sulk? And what are the senators going to do? Here is Senator Charles Schumer, Democrat of New York, on Meet the Press.
I've always said, Tim, there should be a good Supreme Court would have one Scalia and one Brennan, but not five of each.
Which is a good policy because there's only nine members of the court, you see, ladies and gentlemen. So if you had five of each, somebody wouldn't have a chair. And that would be a bad court. Well, I'm trying to get this thing to work, and it's not working. We're at a radio station in case. Here, let's bring the microphone over here, and I'll just push some buttons until we give up. And then when we give up, we'll pull the thing out. Here's how radio actually works, ladies and gentlemen. It sounds so smooth when it works, and then it sounds like this. It's just not going to work. It's not going to work today. So here's what we do now. We put the CD in another machine. You can actually win your license just by following these simple instructions. It's not going to work in any machine. Oh, I see. I was doing it wrong. I am so sorry. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week. It's me who doesn't work.
We're so sorry.
So many machines, and they work in different ways, you see. And I was using the skills I had learned on one on another. Let's bring the microphone. Oh, come on. It's only radio. A former assistant director of Minnesota's crime lab was sentenced Friday to 1 year in the workhouse, a far lighter sentence than possible, for stealing 2 pounds of cocaine from an evidence locker to feed his own addiction. Judge Salvador Rosas sentenced David Bruce Peterson to 7 years in prison, but that sentence was stayed pending the completion of the 30 years probation. The judge acknowledged the sentence was a light one compared with what other drug offenders routinely receive, but he said he considered Peterson's remorse in making his decision. I recognize he was supporting a habit, but the betrayal of trust is a significant thing. But what comes down to, for me, is accountability and the possibility of rehabilitation. You've done all the right things here, he told Peterson. Peterson lost his 81,000-year job at the State Bureau of Criminal Apprehension Lab and the status that went with it, and his reputation as a top authority in his field. Quote, I recognize that taking the cocaine was wrong and using it was wrong, and I'm sorry about that. The guilt and shame of what I've done is something I'm going to have to deal with for the rest of my life. He apologized to the BCA, the criminal justice system, and the people of Minnesota, and said he had failed as a father and a community member. Now go enjoy your probation. A New York City school teacher apologized and resigned on Friday after admitting he pursued a career as a professional wrestler when he told his boss he was on leave to care for a sick relative. Matthew Gay, a social studies teacher at Benjamin Cardozo High School in Queens, had his mother call in sick for him last December. When he returned to school after winter break, the report said he informed the assistant principal that he'd gone to California to care for his sick sister. But a teacher's website revealed he had another life as a wrestler named Matt Stryker. He has apologized. His moves, by the way, include the lung blower and the overdrive. He's known for his charisma, his ability to adjust, and his innovative maneuvers, says his website. And now he's known for his apology. Lil' Kim, who once sang a song about rappers getting effed in the A, in jail, will be behind bars herself for 366 days on counts of perjury and conspiracy. The hip-hop star was convicted and fined $61,000, actually more, in New York this week on charge of lying to a federal grand jury. She escaped a more serious conviction of 20 years. She begged the judge before in sentencing to, quote, consider my entire life's work and not just the days in the grand jury and on the witness stand in the courtroom. I'm a God-fearing good person, she said. She lied to the jury to protect friends involved in a 2001 shooting outside a New York radio station, although there was a photo of her present at the time. She apologized to the court for lying, saying, quote, at the time I thought it was the right thing to do, but I now know it was wrong. Never too late to know lying is the wrong thing to do. Ladies and gentlemen, the mother of a missing Alabama teenager apologized Friday for any offense her remarks about the justice system in Aruba may have caused to Arubans. Beth Holloway Twitty said she'd been extremely distraught with the scarcity of clues to her daughter's fate when she contended the two brothers who'd been tied to the case were guilty and should not have been freed from jail. Her remarks were widely criticized as an unfair attack on the Dutch judicial system. A sheriff's deputy and a former lawmaker reached speeds of nearly 100 miles an hour in Cooperstown, North Dakota, while trying to flee from law enforcement officers. Both admitted they'd been drinking. Griggs County Chief Deputy Bob Hook acknowledged being the driver in the July 4th chase, was demoted and put on probation. Hook apologized, saying he did not have, quote, an excuse to justify his actions. Red lights came on. I got scared and panicked, considering my job and everything. I made a horrible, horrible decision I'm going to have to live with the rest of my life. Those red lights can kill you. That's why I goofed up with the CD here, ladies and gentlemen. I saw that red light, and it just, I went nuts. Corey Clark, a former American Idol contestant, will not face criminal charges stemming from a breakfast brawl at a Sacramento hotel last month. Prosecutors decided they did not have sufficient evidence against him. He was initially cited for misdemeanor battery after an argument with his record company manager. Already, it was going so well on Idol. Escalated into a rowdy food fight. Noisy enough that other guests called the police. Clark and CDC Records executive Laura Kathleen Troy displayed scratches caused by flying foodstuffs and flatware. Troy had marks on her arms where Clark had allegedly grabbed her. Clark explained the way an episode as a misunderstanding and apologized for his actions. My dancers, crew, management, and I were all involved in a food fight that lasted only a few minutes. With that said, in his statement released by his publicist, Clark goes on, I would like to apologize to any hotel guests and or staff that may have been inconvenienced as a result of this situation. Food fight with your dancers, ladies and gentlemen. Always a bad idea. Because they can move. They can get out of the way. You, on the other hand. The San Francisco Catholic Diocese has agreed to pay 12 men more than $16 million to settle remaining suits against the popular San Jose priest. This week's agreement came as attorneys were preparing for trial next week. One of the dozen men was expected to testify that the late Reverend Joseph Pritchard abused him in San Jose. And he also says the priest continued to abuse him after he moved to a church in Los Altos. Well, no wonder he's popular. The settlement works out to an average of $1.3 million for each plaintiff, although each plaintiff doesn't get the same amount. Archbishop William Leveda confirmed the settlement in a written statement in which he also apologized to Pritchard's victims and to, quote, all other victims of the clergy child abuse scandals, unquote. He says the settlement will not be paid from parish or school funds. So please give, because you are the you in that parish. Sir Roy, Dateline London, Sir Roy Meadow expressed his deep sorrow this week for giving misleading evidence in the trial of Sally Clark, This is the first public apology by a pediatrician who helped to convict three innocent mothers of murdering their babies. In an unexpected outburst of remorse 6 years after she was jailed, he compared his feelings to the regret experienced by a doctor whose mistaken diagnosis brings suffering to a child. The retired expert's expression of regret came on a day when the credibility of his child abuse theories was seriously undermined. Under persistent questioning, he admitted that he had no idea of the source of one of his most notorious theories that, quote, the chance of two cot deaths in a typical family was a million to one. He testified that way in the trial of Ms. Clark, whose two children died. A former Chicago City asphalt foreman who sold out taxpayers on the cheap will spend 10 months in jail for his role in a hired truck scandal. Dennis Natale of Chicago took $3,000 to $5,000 in bribes to mark hired trucks as showing up for city jobs when they never did, said the assistant U.S. attorney Manish Shah. When corruption comes that cheap, it's almost the worst kind of corruption. Yeah, man. You're doing the work. Get the money. Natale sold out the city for $100 a day, Shah said. He was sentenced to a year and a half of prison. Quote, I know I committed the crime, and I apologize to the city, to my family, and to you, Natale told the judge. To his family, because he didn't charge more. The BBC network has publicly apologized for a slew of profanities that made it on screen during last weekend's live broadcast of the Live 8 concerts. The network was bombarded with complaints from listeners whose ears were burning after hearing numerous stars let loose with untoward language. Snoop Dogg, no! Snoop Dogg swore on TV. Of all the people on God's green earth, he made no attempt to censor his notorious nasty remarks. Madonna was heard greeting the audience at London's Hyde Park with at least one profanity. She was also shown backstage at one point complaining about the stage lighting. A good girl, using what apparently is her favorite swear word. A BBC spokesman apologized. Unfortunately, it's a live broadcast. Passions are running high and celebrities are emotional, unquote. Celebrities are emotional, ladies and gentlemen. So please be nice, won't you? And Texas Ranger pitcher Kenny Rogers, not the chicken man, not the gambling chicken man, Kenny Rogers apologized this week for last week's tirade against two TV cameramen that sent one to the hospital and prompted a police investigation. Said he had not decided if he'll play in Tuesday's All-Star game. Why not? That's Fox attitude right there. Rogers, who's appealing his 20-game suspension, apologized to fans and the cameraman. He declined to take questions and said he was speaking against his lawyer's advice. I feel compelled to come before you and express my deep regret for my actions, an incident that should never have occurred. I prepare myself every day to control my emotions and act accordingly. In this instance, I failed miserably, he said. He did not add that even baseball celebrities are emotional. All right, I hope it was worth the delay, ladies and gentlemen. The apologies of the week, a copyrighted feature of this very broadcast.
Used to be love.
This is the show, and ladies and gentlemen, we have two different kinds of CD players here in the Le Show Dome, and I tried the procedure on one that is designed to work on the other. You see what I'm saying? Have I made enough about this? Have I dragged enough of this airtime down that particular rabbit hole? Ladies and gentlemen, I know we're not supposed to care, but Defense Department officials failed to adequately plan for the medical care of detainees captured during the Iraq War, causing some medical personnel to reuse needles and other medical supplies and leaving them without guidance on how detainees should be treated. That's according to an Army Surgeon General report released just a couple days ago. Parts of it are redacted, of course. You got to redact them. Otherwise, we'd know everything. This was it was made public a day after the Army Surgeon General announced his office's assessment had only found isolated cases of detainee abuse involving medical personnel. In his Thursday briefing, he also praised the U.S. military's worldwide care of detainees, but he did not mention that his office's own report found serious flaws with the early stages of detainee health care in Iraq and Afghanistan and detailed dozens of alleged cases of abuse, lack of care of questionable collaboration between medical personnel and interrogators who were working to extract the information. The Major General Lester Martinez-Lopez, who led the assessment team, recommended the Defense Department stop using physicians and psychiatrists to aid interrogators. Well, psychiatrists are no good anyway to aid interrogators. Ask Tom Cruise. Just give them vitamins. Lopez criticized the lack of a doctrine or policy defining the role of such behavioral science consultation teams. They're referred to as BISCT teams, BSCT teams within the military. They've stirred controversy because some critics in the medical profession think the teams violate ethical boundaries by using medical information to guide interrogation efforts. The report says members of the teams had access to medical records at Gitmo until June 2004, and BISCT team members at Abu Ghraib had knowledge of detainees' medical conditions until recent months. Martinez-Lopez recommended only senior psychologists that serve on the teams to assist in conducting safe, legal, ethical, and effective interrogation and detainee operations. But Kiley disagreed with excluding psychiatrists and physicians from roles on the teams. The only other point in the report Kiley disagreed with, Kiley being the Army Surgeon General, was a recommendation that, quote, all detained individuals be treated to the same care standards as U.S. patients, unquote. He ordered more studies. But we're not supposed to care about that, ladies and gentlemen, because there's terrorism in the world, and we know that. The New York Post reports this week that Dan Rather is helping fired CBS News producer Mary Mapes with her book, which will be the either called or will at least constitute her version of the other side of the story of the Memogate scandal that got her fired and Dan Rather's early retirement eventuated. As I say, according to the Post, Rather is helping her, even though she's not at CBS News anymore. He still is. He's at 60 Minutes. He has an office in the building, and he's getting paid. But also, according to the Post, he's not getting any stories to do. And not a lot of camaraderie from the folks at 60 Minutes. The word the New York Post uses to describe, owned by Rupert Murdoch, let's be clear, the word the New York Post uses to describe Rather's situation at 60 Minutes is, quote, pariah, unquote. Sounds like another day, bad day at Black Rock. Next here on the show.
Tonight, an eye on America on eye surgery on the CBS Evening News with Bob.
Oh, pathetic. Promo feeds get more pointless to watch every day. This is the new face of the Evening News, Bob Schaefer ripping the lid off the LASIK story. It's piss poor and $2 short. I mean, it's so easy. I'm Dan Rather. Tonight, the eyes have it. Or do they? Simple, elegant, intriguing. That's a pretty fair country promo, if I do say so myself. Which it looks like I have to do right about now. Let's see if they fired up the studio for any.
As we reported here on 60 Minutes last February, it's nothing new for the dapper banker from Curacao.
That's good, and cut.
Yeah, did I lean too heavily on Curacao?
Mike, we had a little trouble in here with Dapper. You need to punch it. It's not the most familiar word in the book.
Yeah, these days, I'm not surprised. When's the last Dapper 25-year-old you've seen?
Might as well tiptoe over and surprise.
And take two any time.
This week, the London markets took a temporary... Daniel.
Ooh. Sorry, Hoss. Didn't want to distract you. Sorrier than a hamster's erection.
Well, then you shouldn't have waved your arms over your head like that.
You know something, sir, please? That scout helping Granny cross the street right.
Well,
I'm just happier than a barn owl in a blizzard to see you.
Owl doesn't sound all that happy.
I just mean that...
No, I know. Let me just finish this intro before the broadcast actually airs, Daniel.
All right, sir. I'll just head back to my...
No, Daniel, just stay there, will you? I'll be through just as soon as I can hammer Dapper.
And hold.
Mike, we're in the Union 10.
Oh, for... Well...
Mind if I scooch in here while you're...
Why don't we go into your office, Daniel?
All right, sir. That's fried egg easy and
soft-boiled egg safe. Daniel, this isn't the best time for you to be hanging around my intro taping like a groupie at a Metallica concert.
Brother Wallace, that's stripping her right down to the studs, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sorry, sir. Been an interesting summer here in the other building.
Well, see, Daniel, we think of that building as... The other building. It's a different culture here. You remember?
Mm-hmm, yes, sir, but I seem to be having a certain problem reassimilating with the natives. Seems to be a stamp I didn't get on my visa.
On the contrary, Daniel, I think there's a mark there, all right.
I...
Look, pal, I'm here from the vineyard on the most beautiful weekend of the summer. You know why?
Seems to me there must be at least 7 million reasons, sir. Most of them dressed up as dollar bills.
Yeah, I wouldn't be here for free, that's for sure. But, Daniel, I'm also here because I love 60.
No, I love 62.
62? We haven't had one of those...
I too, love 60.
Yes, but you hurt 62.
I thought you just finished saying there wasn't a...
But you also hurt 60.
Sir, if I did indeed hurt the broadcast...
It's off the air.
60 Wednesday is, yes, mm-hmm. Sir. But if I did, and I did... Then it was out of nothing but an excess of what made this broadcast top 10 television for so damn long.
Us all being younger than 80?
That ding-dong dedication to old-fashioned dig-till-you-strike-gold journalism. I mean, Michael, sir, please. Am I really to be crucified on a cross of striking gold?
Jeez, you have been cooped up here all month, haven't you?
Well, Fearless Leader hasn't exactly been burning up my phone line.
No.
Or filling up my inbox, or... Draining my cell phone battery, or...
No, I know. It's something we talked about at your going-away party after you left.
Hmm.
That and the Imes.
Oh, Michael, sir, I told our fearless leader, Brother Fager, I didn't care a gnat's nostril about the Imes.
Well,
if I never say I'm Dan Rather at the beginning of 60 ever again, it's no bigger deal than an earthworm's navel.
Yeah. You know,
I'm here to do the work. It's like the folks say on Inside the Actor's Studio... It's all about the work.
Daniel, we heard your agent was playing hardball on the Imes. Not true?
Michael, you know this more than most and better than some. I don't tell my agent how to negotiate. He doesn't tell me how to...
Sit alone in your office watching the promo feeds?
No, sir, he does not.
Look, I think Brother Fager is coming back here the second week in August for some story meetings.
Mm-hmm.
I could get back in town for the day, set up a lunch with him, have a couple of stiff ones, order some crab cakes.
Bring up my situation.
Don't get ahead of yourself, Daniel. There has to be dessert, coffee, and an after-lunch cordial. Then, maybe...
Maybe. Listen here, Michael, please. Get this flagpole straight and Tom Cruise clear, sir. Nobody maybes Dan Rather. You want to put in a good word for me with Fearless Leader, I'll owe you big time. But don't make me dangle like a calf at an amateur rodeo, sir, please.
No, I get you straight and clear. I'll have Connie set something up. You know, no guarantees, old friend. I'm a part-timer here myself these days. I mean, Steve Croft's getting as many Imes as I am, and You know, a lot of us remember he came over from West 57th. Took him 10 years before he really became one of us. But now...
No, I know, but still, when a Mike Wallace says something about a Dan Rather to a Jeffrey Fager, who, by the way, cut his eye teeth on my broadcast.
I know.
You know, that's pancakes down the crapper.
Yeah.
We're deep in the big muddy of the now. But still, it kind of makes some kind of a difference.
No, I suppose so.
It's Brother Rooney, isn't it? He's the lead dog in the sled. The rest are all just looking at his hiney in the Iditarod of corporate inviting.
Oh, I know Andy has made some comments publicly that weren't exactly volunteering to be corresponding secretary of your fan club. But no, I think this is just more of a widespread, almost unacknowledged feeling of a great beast that's been wounded. And yet, Daniel, mm-hmm. if the rumors of the brainstorming sessions upstairs are correct, our broadcast is the model for the new version of your old broadcast.
Mm-hmm. More storytelling from correspondents you know and care about.
Yeah.
It sounds like every news broadcast this company does, except the evening news. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure you want to know that much about Randall Pinkston. Maybe that's just me.
Ready for you, Mike.
I guess nobody babies Mike Wallace either, Brother Rather. I'll let you know what happens.
Well, thank you, sir, and I...
Meantime, probably best that you stay in there.
Thank you, sir. Don't let the bastards get...
After London, what next? Tonight on the CBS Evening News.
Pathetic.
Thanks to Iris of Motown for correcting my pronunciation. It's Obi Bennett from the Four Tops. Ladies and gentlemen, time now for me to read the trades for you. From Advertising Age, I would call this an army of one ad agency. play on words, don't you know? I'll read it for you. Dateline Washington, the U.S. Army, which has had major problems awarding a new advertising contract, bowed to the inevitable this week and extended its contract with its current agency, Leo Burnett, for another 6 months. With the move, Burnett winds up with more than an extra year on an Army ad contract that was supposed to end last summer, and it did so without competitive bidding on the extension. Leo Burnett created the Army of One campaign currently airing, which the Army had said it was unhappy with. The Army also said it would sharply raise ad spending as it works to deal with recruiting shortfalls, as well as the need to spend a bigger chunk of its yearly ad budget over the remaining 6 months of the year. The Army had originally sought a new agency early last year, but after twice delaying the decision, announced it would relaunch the review because of, quote, inconsistencies in the evaluation approach. Army spokesman defended the Army's decision to extend Burnett's contract without competitive bidding, noting the government has the ability to do so in, quote, an emergency. Spokesman clarified, given the situation we face today and the needs to continue recruiting, while it was not an emergency, it was not a situation where the long-term needs would have allowed delay. So it's an emergency, and it's not an emergency. It's like five Scalias and five of the other guys. And from Folio Magazine, in an April 19th front page article in the Wall Street Journal, how companies pay TV experts for on-air product mentions, child technology editor James Oppenheim, a frequent guest expert on local and national news programs, was revealed as being paid as much as $12,000 by clients such as Kodak to plug their products on the air, without disclosing his relationship with the companies to the networks or their viewers. Oppenheim, on a Today appearance late last year, had been paid for local television satellite media tours by at least 8 of the 15 companies whose products he mentioned in the segment. On the same day, magazine publishers and advertisers were trumpeting the advances in, quote, product integration during New York Magazine Day, an annual powwow with ad buyers. For magazines looking to cut an even bigger slice of the product placement dollars being thrown around by media-savvy marketers, the temptation is palpable, says this magazine. Actually, according to a report by PQ Media. When it comes to an editor taking products from his own magazine's pages to TV, the line between advertising and editorial has become increasingly blurry. Or blurry. We don't think about who's advertising, says Brides magazine executive editor Cynthia Hornblower. We pick the appropriate products to take with us on the air. But the Today Show, at least, seems to be tightening its belt on it. Hornblower says she asked Crate and Barrel for products to take with her on a recent Today Show appearance and had agreed to credit them on the air, but the show's producers would not let her. Crate and Barrel, Hornblower says, is a frequent Brides advertiser, but the magazine has relationships with a lot of companies all over the country. More product placement coming your way, ladies and gentlemen, because you won't watch their ads. That's the bottom line, ladies and gentlemen. Finally, we'd love the most when I read the trades for you. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. that is going to conclude this week's edition of the show, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to take remedial CD operator training and bring the program back next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America on the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.415 megahertz, around the world via your computer at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want at harryshear.com and kcrw.com. Available as a free download at audible.com/theshow, available on channel 108 on Sirius Satellite Radio, and available as one of the leading podcasts in the world at kcrw.com. And it would be just like having 10 Supreme Court members, five of each, if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Freddie, thank you very much. Uh-huh. Hey, by the way, the court finally agreed to let the prosecutor see Rush Limbaugh's medical records. So we got some fun coming up. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. Le Show playlists available at harryshearer.com. By the way, a tip of the show chapeau to O.B. Bennett, who not only was the deep voice in the Four Tops, he wrote What's Going On. Now, let's lower some property values. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.